The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez in toward the corner. Get out, Bob. Get out. Get out of here. Get out.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at CBSI.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Knocking down the position tiers here on Wednesday night, January 22nd. Adam Azer and Scott White. We covered first base and second base yesterday. Tonight, shortstop and third base. I'm not going to publish this until Thursday morning, so I'll stop saying tonight because you're all probably hearing this at a different time of the day. But it is Fantasy Baseball Today after dark, so it's going to be fun. And, we got shortstop, we got third base, and prospects, and emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and a possible solution to the Wild Wild West discussion that we had yesterday. Good evening, Scott White.
Good evening, sir. How are you this fine evening?
Doing well, you know.
That might not actually be interpreted as evening, as we already discussed.
Right. Doing well. As of right now, I feel good because I had a very unsatisfying dinner at about 5:30 p.m. But then at about 8:30 p.m. I said, bleep this, I'm going to get a couple of slices of pizza.
Second dinner.
It was good.
I like it.
It was good.
As somebody who is up late working at night often, I can go with the second dinner. I'm all about that life.
I don't want to be like that. I mean, it's going to catch up to me eventually, but tonight it had to happen.
I think I'm heavier since I started doing this. Yes.
Okay. Well, maybe we should stop.
I have gained some weight.
We should stop. All right. So give me one sentence. You know what? I'll loosen the restrictions. Give me 1 to 3 sentences to describe shortstop this year.
Ooh. star studded. That's just a word. That's not a sentence.
It is star-studded.
This requires too much internal editing for me to do on the spot like this, Adam. It's star-studded. It is as loaded at the top as any other position, and it continues to become increasingly so, which is, you know, it's been happening long enough that it's kind of quaint to think of shortstop as this weak position anymore, because it clearly isn't. In fact, it's probably the second strongest. But obviously, you and I have been doing this long enough that that's not how we always think of it.
Yeah, it is pretty incredible. Lindor, Bregman, Story, Trey Turner, Tatis, Bogarts, all those guys could be off the board in the first 24 picks, depending on your draft. All right, give me the same assignment for third base.
Even better than shortstop. That is the number one deepest position.
Deepest, but is it as star-studded?
Not quite, though it's not far off, but it is deeper from top to bottom. There really isn't a weak point in the third base rankings. It absolutely floored me when I was first putting together my top 20s at the position that I couldn't get Justin Turner in it, who had another great year. I mean, not his best year, but he had another great year, a year where he was a must-start player, and yet I couldn't get him in my top 20, which, you know,
yeah,
I think we're thinking of him as top 10 last year.
If he stays healthy, he will be, probably. I mean, he's really good, but he's always hurt. He also got off to a very slow start, right, Turner, and then had a big second half, as I recall. Still sort
catching
up in my
he
research.
He finished strong, yes.
You know, when I was looking at this tonight, and Chris Bryant really stands out. Who is Chris Bryant? What is Chris Bryant? I mean, look at these numbers. 282... 31 homers, only 77 RBIs. And he's just always been bad with RBIs. Bats either, you know, he bats second a lot. That doesn't help, but it's just bad. But 108 runs, good, you know, 74 walks is a lot. 145 strikeouts, which is a lot of the position, but not, you know, astronomical. Number 11 third baseman. He would be the number 7 second baseman. It's just not like 30 home runs is just, it's whatever. I think he has like the 13th most home runs at the position. 31.
It's now, crazy. Are you looking strictly at Roto when you say he was 11th at third base last year?
No, I have
year?
Him in both points and Roto at 11.
11. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think especially in Roto, just because there are so few ways to measure a player, just because a guy happens to have hit 30 home runs doesn't really mean much in this environment, because there are players you can get in the late rounds who, I'm thinking somebody like Lourdes Gurriel. He hit 32 home runs last year, right? Obviously, I'm getting away from third base by bringing him up, but oh, no, he didn't. He hit 20 home runs.
Yuli Gurriel hit 31 home runs.
Yeah. I know. I just defeated the point I was trying to make.
No, but you're right. I mean, I don't know that you can just see. I think we sort of have said that, not you, but Chris has said it a lot. And I don't like disagreeing with people when they're not on the show, where it's like, well, power's not that important because you can just get it later. I don't know that I agree that you're going to get a useful player that's anything more than just power later. But you know what I mean? Like, it's like you get a steal specialist later, but he's awful everywhere else. You might have a home run hitter like Hunter Renfro or something like that, who doesn't really do anything else.
Now, I'm sure he hit 30 home runs last year and is available
right
very late. In fact, he might go undrafted in some shallower leagues.
Right, but the just throughout the first 100, maybe 120 picks, I'm guessing there are just so many hitters that hit 30 home runs, you know, the year before. In the middle rounds, you're going to be able to find plenty of guys who did that. And it's not just
the point I was trying to get to with Lourdes Gurriel. He only played 84 games, so he didn't hit 30 home runs, but it was a 30 homer pace. And you can find players with that kind of power upside very late in drafts. Lourdes Gurriel is kind of in the 175 range, I think. So maybe I shouldn't call him very late, but yeah, it's not something that is really enough to differentiate a player in the environment we're forced to deal with right now. So I get what you're saying.
I'm at 35 right now. I'm trying to count the amount of players who hit 30 home runs. I'll pick it up from where I left off in a minute. New rules for your emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. All right, look, getting a lot of them. Appreciate it. Love it. Going to do a mailbag show on Friday. I like the interesting questions. I like the stuff that are, you know, is about anything that's not a keeper question, basically. But if you want to ask your keeper question, that's fine. Please don't give us 7 to pick. Narrow it down. You know, make it this. If you have a keeper question, the shorter, the better. That's my advice to you. So please try to help us out with that. In the meantime, here's our email of the day. It is from Mario from the city. Okay.
It's 59 players, 59. By the way, who hit 58, who hit 30 plus home runs last year.
Holy cow. There's an easier way to do it than what I was doing, so thank you for doing that.
Yeah, no problem.
Go to like a website that counts them rather than doing it yourself.
I will add that among those 58, people who weren't in the 58 were Javier Baez, Mookie Betts, a first rounder, Rhys Hoskins, Marcelo Zuna, Jordan Alvarez didn't get to 30 because he wasn't up long enough. Aaron Judge didn't get to 30 because of the time he missed. Anthony Rizzo didn't get to 30. So like a lot of guys who populate the early rounds aren't even among the 58 who hit 30 home runs last year.
Wow. Wow.
And, you know, you consider 252 players get drafted in the standard head-to-head league, 276, excluding benches in the standard roto league. If you have roughly 60 30 homer guys plus a bunch of other high-end hitters who didn't quite get there for one reason or another, and then you factor in the number of pitchers that are going to comprise all of those picks, then yeah, there's going to be plenty of power available late in drafts, which is why when you target hitters early on, I think it goes overboard, but steals is one clear differentiator, and also batting average is a big differentiator, which isn't to say you should like get non-power guys. You want to keep pace in the power categories, but you don't need to overdo it for power in the early rounds because there's plenty available late.
Right. But I don't think I would ever make my first two picks something like Trey Turner and another hitter, Scott, who would go in that range that wouldn't really hit for a lot of power. Is there anyone like that? I mean, Tatis has power, so I don't think I would make my two best hitters guys who aren't going to hit 30 home runs. That I think you might be falling behind in home runs, RBIs, runs too much. Be dangerous.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure how I want to approach that yet. I've gone on the record a few times, including just a couple minutes ago, saying that people have kind of this stolen base derangement syndrome where they are so paranoid about getting left out in a scarce category that they're kind of not treating it like it's a category where you would expect to not need many to compete in it, you know? But if that approach then leads you down the path that I took in the mock draft we did earlier today, where I didn't really end up with a single viable stolen base threat, then that's a problem too. So, yeah, I mean, I have a lot I could say about today's draft, but I'm sure we're going to get to that later.
Yeah,
podcast.
We'll have to talk. We did a roto draft
down that road.
We did a roto draft today, and yeah, I mean, it's steals are annoying. I'd be so much less stressed out about fantasy baseball if steals were not a category. So, yeah, I guess I'm saying, like, I would not take... This is a bad example because they're both shortstops, but I wouldn't take Francisco Lindor and Trey Turner as my first two picks. But I don't really think that you're going to find two hitters other than those two in the first two rounds that aren't going to hit 30 homers, unless Mookie Betts doesn't do it again, but I think he probably will.
But hasn't... Yeah, Lindor's hit 30 homers in back-to-back
seasons.
Oh, yeah,
he has. You're right. He is. So, I'm sorry.
I mean, Whit Merrifield would probably be a guy if you're going Trey Turner, end of round one, early round two, and then Whit Merrifield in round three.
Right. Well, yeah. Or even like Jose Altuve, because I know he hit the home runs last year, but you don't know if he's going to be a 30-homer guy. He wasn't. He was, when his best, he was like a 24-homer guy, right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah, look,
but I'm still not even sure that's a problem because you're getting a nice head start in steals. Probably don't really need to go that heavily after them at all anymore. And in batting average between Merrifield and, or if you want to say Altuve and Trey Turner. And then there's a lot of power to be found later.
There
so
is.
I don't want
to
keep going
to
in
know,
circles
though?
Here, but that's...
You know, right. Yeah.
I'm
totally
still working
subject.
My way through that because it's every draft I've done so far, which is only a handful at this point. We're still early in the process. But every one I've done so far, I go in thinking, okay, I'm going to target starting pitcher harder early than I ever have before. And then in the middle of the draft, I'm like, how can I pass up this great hitter here? I guess I'll address pitcher next round. And then the next round comes, how can I pass up this great hitter here? I guess I'll address pitcher in the next round, you know? And then suddenly all the pitchers are gone and there's still hitters I want, but my lineup is basically full already. It's like, gee, I still didn't go heavily enough after starting pitchers. And and specifically in a roto league, you could say the same thing about stolen bases. So while... Yeah, there's going to come a point in a standard roto draft where I just have to be like, okay, it feels too early to take this base stealer, but I can't
do it.
Not give myself a chance in the category. So I will take him here and just go out of rank to do it. And, you know, because I don't want to rank them all that high and put somebody in a position where they're getting all the base stealers because that just seems wasteful. But there is going to come a point where you have to be conscientious about it and maybe reach a little for it.
Yeah. All right. Topic for a different show. I think what I'd like to know though is of these 30 homer guys, how many of them give you a good batting average, you know, let's say 280 or better. I don't know, whatever we want to make it. And then how many of them are available after round five, something like that. And then you might be able to have a better idea, assuming two of your first five picks at least are going to be pitchers. You know, you can have a better idea of if you can go with two sort of light hitting hitters with your with two of your first three or four picks or something like that. You have to know, you know, because it's easy to find a guy who hits 260 and hits 30 home runs. Okay, that's a dime a dozen these days. But how many of those 30 plus homer guys, there were 59 of them, you said? 58. How many of them actually won't hurt you in batting average? And maybe, you know, we find out when they go and maybe we can put together a little bit of a strategy. Here's our email of the day. It's from Mario from the city that has the quote Pliny of the Younger end quote release. Looking at you, Heath. No idea what that means. And he says, hey, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. I know them. I was listening to the Tuesday podcast when the idea of expanding categories to help maintain starting pitcher relevancy popped up. We ran into this exact issue 4 years ago, and we found a solution that we enjoyed. We added a negative category, lowest score wins the category, to hitting and pitching. So it was strikeouts for hitters, fewest strikeouts wins, and home runs allowed for pitchers. Home runs allowed for pitchers tends to favor RP, so to balance it back out, we ended up switching wins to quality starts. I just wanted to throw out that new idea and hear your opinions on negative categories.
Well, how is
that doesn't know? I don't
how
know
how
that
is increase. How is adding home runs allowed as a category for pitchers increasing the relevancy of starting pitchers? He just said himself that
because he did switch from wins to quality starts. But yeah, this feels like a net loss.
Yeah,
for starting pitchers,
he created a new problem to solve, and we already weren't happy with that solution before the new problem you created. So, yeah, I'm not
fail.
It's. That one's not working for me.
Okay. Bad email today. I am sorry. Mario, do better. I know. It probably makes sense to you, but just not to us. Okay. From that to our news and notes, the Mets are going to hire Luis Rojas as their manager. He is Felipe Alou's son. You can read all about why he doesn't have the same last name. Kansas City signed Alex Gordon to a one-year deal. Great. And Jameson Taillon began a throwing program, but we're not expecting him this year or maybe late this year. But that's it. Not a lot of news and notes to get to. So right into the shortstop tiers. Scott White, a lot of talent at the top, as we mentioned. You have a super elite tier of 4. You have an elite tier of 2. And then you've got a near elite tier that's gigantic. So super elite. How many should go in the first round? Francisco Lindor, Alex Bregman, Trevor Story, and Trey Turner.
I think there's a chance all 4 of them go in the first round, especially in a Roto League where there is that emphasis on steals early on. I think of these 4, Story and Turner are 3rd and 4th for me. But because of that emphasis on steals, we saw Story actually go first of this group in the mock draft we did earlier today. I think it was 6th overall. And you know, obviously Story gives you more than just steals. Steals are kind of his least productive category of the 5.
Yeah,
but
23
he does
steals.
Give you some.
Yeah.
Back-to-back years.
I guess I wouldn't say I love it, but I'm cool with it because I remember we did a mock draft several months ago and I thought Story was going too late. I think he went in the 2nd round and I think he's a 1st rounder in Roto because he backed it up. I mean, in Roto, he was the number 10 hitter in 2019 and the number 6 hitter in 2018. In points, he was the number 19 hitter in 2019, number 10 in 2018. So he batted very similar seasons. 294, 35 homers, 85 runs, 111 RBIs, very similar seasons, about 25 steals. And I guess, is 25 steals a big number for you, Scott, this day and age?
It is, but this kind of goes into one of the problems I have with overvaluing a guy just because he does contribute something in that category is I feel like the fewer steals a guy is delivering, and 20 seems like the threshold where it starts to get dicey, like how how reliable is he to do that? You know, like, if he's only stealing 20 bases, it doesn't seem like that's such an indispensable part of his skill set that he could just stop, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep, yep.
And we saw Ryan Braun briefly become a 20 steal guy. We saw Paul Goldschmidt briefly become a 20 steal guy, mm-hmm. and then it ended just as quickly as it started.
Yeah, so. And he had 27 the year before. So what if he's 19 this year? Are people going to pay that? Are people going to pay a first round price tag for that? You know, I still think that if he bats 295, hits 35 home runs, has 200 plus runs in RBIs, then it's fine. You know, but
oh yeah,
there's still downside because of the K's.
He's a good enough hitter in a safe enough environment for hitting that. Yeah, if you make him your first round pick, Trevor Story, that's not going to be the reason you lose your league. But I don't want to bank too heavily on the steals for him and for a lot of these players going in the early rounds here. You have some hope that he can contribute in the steals category, but you shouldn't depend on it. Yeah, you're going to have some redundancies if this is your steal strategy, because you don't really know where they're going to come from.
Can we talk about Bregman? He's pretty interesting. In a points
sure.
league, you know, you could make the case for him as the number one overall player. I don't think it would be a very strong case, but it would go something like this. He was the number one overall hitter in points leagues last year, but yeah, he doesn't have quite the track record. In Roto, I guess, do you think he's a 40 homer guy? Because I feel like if he does basically everything he did this year, and he hits 35 home runs instead of 41 home runs, and with that, the runs and the RBIs would come down a little bit, because you do see sometimes guys have... He scored 122 runs and he had 112 RBIs. Like, that could come down. So we're not talking about like a 330 hitter here. We're not talking about a guy who gets you steals. He only had 5 last year. He feels like Nolan Arenado with shortstop eligibility, but only one season of Nolan Arenado, you know? And I know he's in his prime now. He's going to be 26 years old in March. I guess what I'm saying is I'm a little worried that Alex Bregman is more of a second-round player in a Roto league. In a points league, his play discipline is so damn good, so I'm not worried about it.
But I mean, it's only been 1 year, but...
Of 40 homers,
we were
of Nolan Arenado.
In the first round at this time a year ago, too. I mean, 41 yeah. home runs versus the 31 and he hit in 2018, that's no small difference. But he's so bankable in every other category except stolen bases. And the walks don't count for anything directly in Roto, obviously, but it does increase his run scoring potential. He had 122 runs scored this past year, 105 in 2018. It's just very, very safe. Unless you want to make the argument he was wearing a buzzer on his shoulder.
No. I think he's very safe. But if you have a first round pick and you can choose between a guy like Bregman and a guy that could steal 20 more bases than Bregman, like a Lindor or a Trevor Story, if Bregman does what he did in 2018, I think he's going to disappoint as a first round pick, in my opinion. In a Roto league only, and in a Roto league that has a batting average, not OBP, because he is great at OBP. He's like elite there, and his plate discipline, which matters so much in points leagues, is among the best in baseball. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, he hits for a really good average too. Look, I have Lindor over him in a Roto league, okay. And I have Story just after him in the same tier. So it's not. I'm not disagreeing in a huge way here. It's just what you prefer from an early round pick, I think. And I see a lot less downside in Bregman than certainly in Story, which isn't to say I think Story has a lot of downside, but he has more than Bregman.
Okay, cool.
And, maybe Lindor
sorry.
Too.
Let's go to the next tier then, Scott. And we have Fernando Tatis and Xander Bogaerts. So they're second round guys to you?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying, I guess. Well, in the case of Bogaerts, he doesn't have the upside of that first group before. He's not far off, but he's not quite there. He's kind of like Trevor's Story without the potential for steals. And then in Tatis's case, he has the upside of that group of four, but he has a lot more downside. I mean, he struck out a ton last year. His BABIP was off the charts. It looks like there's going to be some batting average regression coming, and he had a hard time staying healthy. So that's, there are some risks there for Tatis that drop him to a lower tier.
Bogarts, I think, in a points league, you know, he was the third, he was the number three shortstop in both formats, but in a points league, he is a doubles machine. He had 45 doubles in 136 games in 2018. He had 52 doubles last year. And his plate discipline really improved late in the 2018 season and then into the 2018 postseason and then all throughout 2019. So doubles, plate discipline, that means points league. So I'm not saying he's bad in Roto. He's safer in points. He's better in points leagues, but he's very good in both. Okay. If you miss out on those guys, that's six players, Lindor, Bregman, Story, Turner, Tatis, Bogarts. Now let's get into the next, the near elite tier, which is going to have a very big range, Scott, of ADP. I mean, Gleyber Torres could go in the third round. I don't know, maybe the fourth round. Carlos Correa, Bo Bichette, Jonathan Villar, Marcus Semien, Javier Baez, Manny Machado. That's a big group of near elite. And there's going to be a big price difference between Gleyber Torres and, say, Marcus Semien. So
yes, there is.
So let's
and
talk about this.
That should tell you which I'm much more likely to draft, mm-hmm. which would be Semien, which is kind of the point of the whole process, right? Is
yes.
To make sure you're not paying for something that's not going to make a substantive difference given the amount you're paying for him. Like, I'm not saying Semien, you can look at him in every way and say, okay, this guy's as good, as safe as Gleyber Torres. But the most likely outcome, I think, for those two players is similar, and it's possible Semien has the better year. He did this past year.
So what's up with Javier Baez? We call him a bust on draft day, and I think he was, but only because the steals went away. He actually hit pretty well, batted .281 with 29 homers, but he only had 11 steals in 18 attempts. But yeah, and this is a guy that was going in the second, maybe third round last year, and now he's probably in your top 12, but closer to 12 than, he's probably around 12,
yeah.
Right, for you?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the biggest drop off was in the steals, but he kind of took a little bit of a step back across the board, which was my concern with him. I think that bust label, I mean, there's a few different ways you could interpret bust. Obviously, was it a complete bottoming out? No, but I didn't expect it to be. It was more a case of him failing to live up to expectations. And okay, he could have fallen even more than he did, but we did see everything drop just enough that at a crowded position with a ton of studs, I don't think he's that much of a standout. And I think his most likely scenario is that again, which isn't to say he's not a perfectly fine starter. I just don't see why he's not somebody. I just don't see why he is, why you would consider him somebody you need to pay up for, especially since you can't bank on steals and may not get much of a contribution at all in that category.
Yeah, right now, Starling Marte, or he's going two picks after Starling Marte, sorry, Javier Baez. Javier Baez is going 36th overall on Fantasy Pros, and he went 45th overall in the draft that we did today to Frank Stampfl. So, that's a significant discount of what, that's a significant difference of one round, basically, in ADP. But obviously, within the margin of error, it could change depending
on the
draft.
I have him lower than that. I'm not, by tiering him with this other group, I'm acknowledging I'm not going to have much Javier Baez this year. And I'm okay with it. I think he's a little overrated. I think he's such a headline-worthy, you know, highlight reel player that people just want to like Javier Baez. There's a lot to like about him. He's a better real-life player than I think fantasy player because the defense is so good. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't change the fact that you need specific statistical contributions from him. And in this environment, he's not I mean, he's clearly a great player, but he's not that big of a standout at a position where there's so many others who could do similar things.
Gleyber Torres, by the way, did go in the third round, so in the draft that we did today. So, and let's see just where Marcus Semien went, who was an MVP candidate last year, as Scott mentioned. He went to Scott with the second pick of round 8. So big tier there. And yeah, we'll have plenty of time to talk about these guys. I'm more nervous about players that just shocked us last year. But I don't think that eighth round in a roto league like this, deep league, a lot of hitters and middle infield spot for Semien is bad at all, even though I'm nervous about him. But the one guy I did want to get in this draft, and I was curious to see where he'd go, I was curious to see how people would feel about him, Adalberto Mondesi, who's in your next best things category, and he along with Tim Anderson, both of them would be in a tier lower in points leagues. I don't think I want anything to do with Mondesi in points leagues. His plate discipline is horrendous. But man, does he run. And with Trey Turner the last 2 years being more of like a 45 steal guy, like Mondesi, when he's healthy, he's what Trey Turner used to be. Like if Mondesi plays, well, he's
in terms of stolen base.
Yes. That's all I meant.
Yes.
If Mondesi stays healthy, he could win the stolen base title by like 30 bags. So I kind of wanted him in this draft and I did not get him, but Adalberto Mondesi, I'll tell you where he went in a second. He went at the end of close to round 5, so like 57th overall.
Yeah. And I get it. That might be a situation where I just have to hold my nose and take him to shore up steals, even though I don't think he's that caliber of player. I look at the players surrounding him at that stage of the draft and I'm like, oh, I want those guys so much more. But yeah, he could single-handedly carry you in that category that is one that you're going to have to overpay for. So that might be one way to do it. I was very enthusiastic about Mondesi last year, as you know, and he really let me down as a hitter. He regressed in a number of ways in that phase of the game, and I just really have very little expectations for him whatsoever.
Scorn lover.
In any of the other categories.
He started out great his first 2 months, man. He had an 812 OPS. He had he was on pace for 58 steals, 38 doubles, 21 triples, 18 homers, a .288 batting average. He looked like a first round player, and then he just was awful after that as a hitter. But he still ran. I don't know what. I guess I have to look into that. Was there something to that? Did he get hurt? Is that the reason? I know he did get hurt, but was that the reason why he struggled at the plate, or was he just off to an unsustainable start and we saw his true colors as a hitter? But it's easy to forget, Scott. Like you loved him and you looked brilliant because Mondesi was basically one of the most valuable players in fantasy in a roto league for the first 2 months. Okay, moving on here. Tim Anderson is also in this tier, and we're going a little long here on shortstop, so we'll try to wrap it up so we can get to third base. How do you feel about him? Out of nowhere, he had this great batting average, .335 last year, 18 homers, 17 steals in 123 games. He was terrific.
Yeah, and he tweaked his swing in a way that helped him with secondary stuff, and it's hard to know exactly how to account for that with everything else. I do think he became a legitimately better player last year, but he's going to be on my bust list because I do think for whatever improvements he made, the batting average is unsustainable. The data shows it's unsustainable. He's not going to have that high above .300 batting average again. Maybe a pretty good source of batting average, but then you factor in, like, the stolen bases are always just a scary proposition with them. Like he has stretches where he looks like, oh, he's taking advantage of his speed. Look, he might be a 40 steal guy all of a sudden. And then he has, you know, a 6-week stretch where he doesn't run at all. And he ends up with 17 to 25 stolen bases. And it's like, I don't know. Like the main reason you're drafting him that high is for the steals. Okay, here's another steal source who won't hurt you in other categories. But if he doesn't give you those steals, then he becomes pretty fringy, I think, especially if you're anticipating a fall in batting average.
Okay, and then if you don't get those guys, who do you like to fall back on at shortstop? Who are in the following tiers that you like to focus on?
Well, I mean, at this point, we're, what, 18 deep at the position, something like that. So you've been negligent if you don't have it filled yet.
16,
oh, no, well, I'm sorry. I was skipping the fallback options tier includes Jorge Polanco, yeah. Corey Seager. That's about 18 deep. I'm fine with them as starters. I think Corey Seager, first year back from Tommy John surgery, it was a little bit disappointing given his track record, but the underlying numbers, I feel like he's still a good line drive hitter with good plate discipline, and that's going to lead to big things still. He's going to bounce back from this pretty well. Jorge
Polanco.
Jorge Polanco, I'm a little concerned about him sustaining quite the level he performed at in 2020, but yeah, he's a really good line drive hitter too with good plate discipline. Not as much upside as Seager, but definitely enough to be a starting caliber player.
And I like, surprise, surprise, I like Didi Gregorius, you know, as like a dollar player in a roto league. You don't draft him in a one shortstop league or anything like that, but if you need a middle infielder or if you just load it up everywhere else, I don't see a reason why Didi Gregorius cannot be what he was with the Yankees before this awful season, which came after he was recovering from Tommy John surgery. So he was really bad in 2019, but he was pretty predictable and pretty good before that, and a guy you can plug in, especially if he's one of your last picks. He can represent for you at shortstop if he gets back to form. He's still in a good ballpark. He'll be in a good lineup with the Phillies, so I'm cool with him. All right, that's shortstop. So let's go to third base. So we've got, in our super elite, Nolan Arenado, Alex Bregman, and Anthony Rendon. And then in the elite, we have Jose Ramirez and Rafael Devers. That's your top five. Arenado, Bregman, Rendon, Jose Ramirez, Rafael Devers are a tier just behind those top three.
Yeah, and I struggle with that a little bit. I could see combining those to have one five tier of a Studley tier that's five deep, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to reconcile the tiers across positions, I thought this was a more logical way to do it. I think the downside for Jose Ramirez and Rafael Devers is more obvious than it is for Bregman, Arenado, and Rendon. And like that seems like the truest of tiers there at the top, those three, Arenado, Bregman, Rendon, because I've struggled to rank those three, gone back and forth a few times and how I want to do that. And it varies between the two formats too. I have Arenado number one in Roto. I have Arenado number three in points. So that seems like just like a textbook tier, considering I can't really decide between those three.
I think that a lot of people might take Jose Ramirez over Rendon in a 5x5, you know, categories league.
That might happen, yeah.
It shouldn't happen in a points league, you know.
Definitely not.
Because Rendon is so good in that format.
Right. Not that it's a bad format for Ramirez, but Rendon's value changes more between the two than Ramirez's does.
Right, exactly. Jose Ramirez, what a strange season. Pre-All-Star break, he slugged .652. Sorry. His OPS. Pre-All-Star break, his OPS was .652. Post All-Star break, his slugging percentage was .739. His slugging percentage was almost 100 points higher than his OPS before the break. So he stole bases. He only played 129 games or something like that. Missed some time. But he stole 24 bases, which was nice. And then he really started hitting late in the year and then got hurt. So what a strange, strange season that was for him.
It was a strange full calendar year,
right,
nearly, for Jose Ramirez, where he struggled to hit .220. You know, it began August of 2018, and that's about as long of a slump. You know, the peaks surrounding that valley, the discrepancy there was about as large as I can ever remember for a slump of that length. And it ended just as abruptly as it began. And I feel like the good version seems like the truer version of Ramirez. That's the one I want to trust in. But it's hard to understand just how he could fall off that much for that long. Best I can tell, and I know Dan Richards at Pitcher List has done a lot of research on this. And basically every time I talk about Jose Ramirez on the podcast, he brings it up to me on Twitter. So looking forward to hearing from him again. But it seems like Jose Ramirez got very home run conscious during this slump.
That, you know what? I think I almost positive, Scott, that I read Francisco Lindor actually say that. Someone on the Indians said, you know, he needs to, in a nicer way, he needs to stop trying to hit home runs all the time. He's trying to do too much, basically. The home runs kind of got in his head.
Yeah, that seems to be what happened. And, you know, it was a surprise that he became a home run hitter at all. So that kind of makes sense. But obviously, he seems to be back on track now, and that's a very good thing.
Yeah, all right, so you got those five players, Arenado, Bregman, Rendon, Jose Ramirez, Rafael Devers. They're in your top two tiers. How much separation is there between those guys and the next tier, which is the near elite, which is Chris Bryant, Eugenio Suarez, who led all third basemen in home runs last year. I believe he had 49. DJ LeMahieu, Max Muncy, Manny Machado, Jeff McNeil, and Vladimir Guerrero.
In terms of upside, there's not much separation. But in terms of most likely outcome, I mean, there's definitely a step back there. There's a bigger step back than I think between those first two tiers. Chris Bryant's been tough to figure out for a couple years now, but I don't think anybody should realistically expect elite production from him anymore. Near elite, sure. That's why he's in the near elite tier. Mm-hmm. But it's been a while since we've seen him be that MVP caliber bat.
And then
there are some guys here. It's kind of there are kind of players with a few different issues going on in this group. I mean, yeah, LeMahieu and Muncy, they're elevated because of their second base eligibility. Machado, I mean, we know what his upside is, but do I?
I don't know that we do anymore.
Really? Well,
because he doesn't play in Baltimore anymore.
Yeah, I mean, we're making the same point. We're just using different words for it. Like, we know what the upside is. It's first round caliber. He's been that several times in the past. But am I that confident in him reaching it anymore outside of Baltimore, given his history there versus everywhere else? No, I'm not. And in fact, his most likely outcome might actually be a tier lower than this.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to draft him. Oh, well, we'll see where he falls. Let me see where he went, where Machado went in this recent draft. Because I heard Heath comparing, round seven. Round seven for Machado, one spot ahead of Carlos Correa, but three spots after Mike Moustakas. So, all right. Now that I think I just like the Correa pick a lot in that group.
Yeah, I mean, I would take Machado over both. You know what? I wouldn't take him over Correa. I would rank those three personally, Correa, Machado, and then Moustakas, even knowing Moustakas has the second base eligibility. But
Let me just say, though, in this round, like, James Paxton was the next pick. Trevor Bauer, Corey Kluber. I feel like you might want to take those pitchers over those hitters. It obviously depends on your team through that point. I'm trying to make a bigger point, I guess, about hitters, and I'll get to it after you finish. But what I'm going to say is basically that, Scott, I don't think there's a huge drop off from this tier of near elites to the next best things right after. But go ahead.
I think the most interesting from this group is Vladimir Guerrero, who I have at the very end of the tier. I think most people are going to have him near the beginning of the tier, and considering how big of a tier this is, how deep of a position this is, I understand that Vladimir Guerrero probably has top tier upside, but when you factor in the downside, which is, you know, not top 12 at the position, that, you know, that he wasn't deserving of that based on what he did last year, and there are some issues there in terms of the launch angle, basically, how many ground balls he hits, how many line drives he doesn't hit. There are some issues there that he's going to have to figure out. That the actual hard hit rate, although he had some of the very hardest hit balls in all the majors, the overall hard hit rate was pretty pedestrian for Vladimir Guerrero. Very young. I think he's going to be a star still, but will it happen this year? Given what you're passing up for him, I don't think it's worth the gamble. So I go ahead and tier him in here, but I don't know that that's his most likely outcome. I'm just I'm doing it in part because I'm confident I won't be the one who ends up with him because of some of the other third basemen I have in this tier.
He'll be polarizing, no question, Vladimir Guerrero. And I'm more likely to gamble on somebody like that because I want a league winner. Because like Bryant and Suarez, Suarez hit 49 home runs, and he was the number 9 third baseman in points and number 6 in Roto. And that was with 49 home runs. So he's more or less an all or nothing kind of hitter. Where, you know, you
well,
look at this.
There's a lot of, they were pretty bunched together. I feel like at the position, like he technically may have come out 9, but it was very little swinging that him there as opposed to like 5th at the position, you know?
Not quite. I'll about 25 points.
Yeah. Well, if you do per game, maybe let me check that.
Okay.
Cause I feel like we discussed this when we talked about Donaldson being 7th, and it was like, man.
Oh, he's only 3 points behind Donaldson. Yeah.
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 Okay.
But,
well,
but
that's the difference between 7th and 9th right there.
Yeah. But there's a big difference. There's actually a pretty big gap between 5 and 7.
Okay. Fair enough.
That, which would be Eduardo Escobar and DJ LeMahieu. And these are points, not Roto. So, sorry. Anyway, I think you look at that tier, Scott, of the near elites, and I'll read the list again since I'm sure all of you can't remember it. Chris Bryant, Eugenio Suarez, DJ LeMahieu, Max Muncy, Manny Machado, Jeff McNeil, Vladimir Guerrero. Who has the most upside there? I think in Roto, I think it's Vlad. What do you think?
Oh, it's definitely Vlad. I mean, Vlad could be a first rounder at this time next year and make me look dumb for including him in my bust list like I'm probably going to do, but I think it's the right process, even though I'm acknowledging, yes, he has that kind of upside. Yes, it could make me look bad. But if you miss out on him and draft one of these other guys instead, that's not going to be the reason you lose. Drafting Vladimir Guerrero in round 4 or whatever could be the reason you lose.
Mm-hmm.
So don't give yourself a reason to lose.
And let me bring up another point about a deep position. I don't know if I've ever thought this before. I don't know if I believe it, but here we go. Top of mind right now. Because there are so many great players, if you take Vladimir Guerrero, you're probably, or anyone, right? You're not going to draft a third baseman for a while. If you take a third baseman early, you're not going to take one for a while, most likely. You're going to fill other positions. All the other ones are going to get scooped up. If you draft a bust at that position, you're going to be in a huge disadvantage, at a huge disadvantage to the rest of your league. Since it's such a strong position. Now, maybe you can just go to the waiver wire and get another guy, but...
Well, there so many are going to be drafted.
Yeah, that's true. And you might two, but you also might miss out on so many.
Even in a head-to-head points league, or head-to-head categories even, you know, the smaller lineups without the extra lineup spots, the corner infield spot, whatever. There's still probably going to be upward of 20 third base eligible players drafted, so... Naturally, what's left at that position is going to be bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
Now, it might be easy to work out a trade with somebody who drafted one of those redundancies, but like leagues are very different in terms of how active the trade market is, and people are very different in terms of how willing they are to give up excess, you know? So I just don't like depending on having to make a trade to get out of the hole like that.
Yeah, I would say that some positions are deep on draft day, but not deep during the year because they get drafted and they're used as utility or bench spots. They're not deep on waivers, even though they're deep on draft day. But I wouldn't mind, Scott, living in the next best things tier of Moncada, Matt Chapman, Josh Donaldson, Miguel Sano, Mike Moustakas, and Eduardo Escobar. I like Donaldson the most, I think, in that group. You have Moncada, Chapman, Donaldson, Sano, Moustakas, and Escobar in the next best things. A lot of pop in this group here. And, you know, in a one third baseman league, I don't know that you need one of these guys to be your starter, but in any league that has some depth, or again, we could be talking utility here, I think it's pretty solid. I think it's a really good tier. So we're almost 20 deep here.
It is. And it was a tier that, you know, it's not always super straightforward putting together these tiers. Sometimes it's easy. They really jump out at you. Okay, this is clearly a tier. This is clearly the next tier. But these last two tiers here, finding the right dividing line between them, there needed to be one Because if you, you know, you look at Chris Bryant versus the last guy in this next tier, who is it, Eduardo Escobar,
mm-hmm.
or Mike Moustakas, I mean, they clearly belong in different tiers, the highest guy versus the lowest guy. But where in the middle does that drop off happen? And I don't think that's crystal clear. I could have easily included Yoan Moncada and Matt Chapman, I feel like, in the next tier up. If I was more upside minded, I could probably include Miguel Sano in the next tier up. Donaldson, obviously, the same way. I see a lot of downside in both Donaldson and Sano, so that's why I ultimately chose them to tier them lower. I think there's a lot more that could go wrong there, but upside wise, I mean, Donaldson, we were just saying, was even better than Eugenio Suarez last year. And Miguel Sano seems like one of the most likely people to hit 50 home runs this upcoming season. So I would be fine with them starting for me at third base, but it definitely feels riskier than the tier above them.
All right, Scott, you can check out the rest of the tiers, everybody, at cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball. It's good stuff. Let's finish up with your prospects. Give me a few prospects that should be drafted in a 12-team league.
In a 12-team league, obviously Luis Robert. Pretty clear he's going to be on the opening day roster after signing a long-term deal. Was a 30-30 guy in the minors last year. A good potential steal source in the middle rounds of a roto draft. Kind of probably like the round 9, maybe even round 8 range. I say potential steal source because we really don't know how often a player is going to run until he's up and running. It's a matter of intent, and that's what makes it such a frustrating stat to deal with. So he's obvious there, Luis. I'm sorry, Jesus Luzardo needs to be drafted everywhere. He's going to be a spark for you points leaguers out there. I wonder about the innings coming off an injury plagued year, and obviously this is his first full big league season as a starter, but I don't worry about the effectiveness. I think it's going to be Chris Paddock part two, and he's just going to be great. He might even be my AL Rookie of the Year choice over Robert. Joe Adell's probably going to be drafted Angels outfielder in 5 outfielder leagues. He has similar upside to Luis Robert. Hasn't actualized it yet in the minors, only 20 years old, but most people seem to think he's going to be up sooner than later. Mackenzie Gore, probably going to get drafted in 12-team leagues. Padres pitcher, the consensus best pitching prospect right now.
Oh my God,
his
numbers.
It could be a mid-season arrival for him, kind of a longer-term stash.
So he has crazy numbers, right? Because I remember looking at Chris Paddock's numbers last year and be like, what? It's just remarkable. And
Mackenzie Gore, most of this was at California League, which is one of the most hitter-friendly leagues in the minors. 169 ERA, 0.83 whip, 135 strikeouts in 101 innings. Mackenzie Gore is going to be a big deal. How soon? Don't know exactly, but possibly as soon as the middle of this year. Carter Kiboom, it sounds like he's the front runner for the Nationals' third base job. We saw him a little bit in the majors last year, and it went horribly. He was rushed because of a Trey Turner injury, but he is looks like a safe bat, good plate discipline, good bat skills, enough power to thrive in this environment. Man, I could keep going. Alec Baum, I feel like he's going to take over as the Phillies' third baseman eventually this year. And he has great place discipline. You know, should hit for average and power. He looks like a legit prospect. Forrest Whitley, I think, is going to get his chance in the Astros' rotation eventually this year after they lost 3 members from last year's rotation, right?
They lost Wade Miley,
Colin
Garrett
Miley,
Cole.
Maybe just 2.
Yeah.
But it'll happen for it. Was terrible in the minors last year, but he was the consensus top pitching prospect in baseball at this time a year ago and was dealing with some shoulder issues, some mechanical issues, seemed to get right in the Arizona Fall League, still has great stuff. That's Forrest Whitley. Dylan Carlson of the Cardinals. Breakthrough switch hitter with power and speed. Made it to AAA last year. they're kind of lacking in star power in that lineup, so I think they'll be using him. They'll be turning to him sooner than later. I think pretty much all of these guys, like in a standard roto league with the extra hitter spots, maybe not Baum, maybe not Alec Baum, but the rest you pretty much see drafted. Let me go further down in my top 100 here.
Okay.
To like lower probability prospects, but with clearer roles. Austin Hayes, remember him?
Yeah.
From a couple years ago.
Yeah.
He looks like a shoo-in for the Orioles, for a starting job in the Orioles outfield this year. And had it rough in the minors the past couple years. Some injuries, some struggles playing through injuries. But he was awesome last spring, and he was awesome last September. It's like he steps it up against major league pitching. And it's a really interesting bat, I think. He doesn't walk much, but he looks like a guy who can really hit. Unless you look too closely at the numbers. I don't know. I'm kind of an Austin Hayes optimist, because when we've seen him at his best, it's been really impressive. For the Rockies, a guy I just drafted late in today's mock was Sam Hilliard, who we saw a little bit last year. Strikes out too much, but Coors Field obviously can help make up for that. Tons of power. We saw him hit 70 home runs, I think at about 70 at-bats last year. And I think between the majors and the minors, he had something like 42 home runs. Also can steal bases. I don't know how much he's going to play. He's a left-handed hitter, and they have some extra pieces in their outfield there, especially if Garrett Hampson is playing a lot of outfield. But Sam Hilliard should be on the roster and should play at least semi-regularly. Power speed source at Coors Field. I think you got to be excited about that.
I'm excited, yeah. Well, that's a lot of names.
I could keep going.
That's okay. It's okay. It's a lot of names. We always get prospect questions. I'll read some on our Friday mailbag. And you try to come up with rules for prospects, this is what happened last year, so this is how we should treat them this year. And it's so unpredictable what's going to happen when these guys come up. But remember, Pete Alonso, Fernando Tatis, Chris Paddock made huge impacts right from day one. And they were all great draft values. Meanwhile, Keston Hiura was horrible when he came up. Garrett Hampson stunk. Vlad, like,
Keston Hiura was horrible when he first came up. But then he came up later.
Right, and who was going to buy into him then? Who's going to pick him up at that point? Just look at the Blue Jays. I mean, Biggio and Vlad disappointed, but Bichette was really good. So you just never know. But it's fun to take a shot on them, because sometimes they can have a really big impact. So we'll talk about it throughout the next couple months. We're like 63 days away from opening day, which feels like a lot. 62, something like that. I saw it on our league homepage.
Does that feel like a lot? Because I feel like we're just getting into the swing of draft prep here. And
63 days, 14 hours.
2 months, that's it. It's March 26th is opening day. That's the earliest opening day ever, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
I like that.
So they're... Are they going to take it started early?
Oh, the whole season starting early, or they're like doing a few games in Mars, and then they're going to come back to Earth and play the rest of the series or something?
Mars. I thought you misspoke trying to say March there for a second. Oh, no, they're not going to Mars. They're not going to Australia.
Okay.
I think it's a situation where everybody opens on the 26th.
All right, let's do it, man. Let's do it. I actually, as a fantasy analyst, I loved the new schedule, which was more spread out, because just having, this is going to sound bad, like I don't like the job, that's not the case, but just having one or two fewer games on a Tuesday or a Wednesday night or something like that to go over and to get ready for the next show, it really lightened the workload a lot. It made it a lot more manageable. I don't know if you felt that way, Scott, but I loved it.
Let's see. I mean, I get what you're saying. I guess you're right. I'm just verifying what I was saying about the 26th of everybody's playing that day. And I can't tell.
Go to the MLB scoreboard. It's probably
it looks like
training,
the White Sox and Royals are playing a game at Surprise Stadium in Surprise, Arizona. So clearly their season isn't opening yet.
maybe they are just playing a game at a stadium to be determined. Surprise! And it's a real game. All right, we got to go. I'm getting loopy. Thanks for listening. Back tomorrow with a mailbag. See ya.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.